Hello, and welcome to Season 7 of the Dementia Researcher iStart Relay podcast. In this series, members of the iStart's professional interest areas interview each other about their PIAs and the hot topics in their fields. Each guest then becomes the next episode's host, passing the conversation along from one researcher to the next. We're releasing one episode a day in the run-up to the Alzheimer's Association International Conference this year in London and online, showcasing the work of the iStart PIAs. Thank you for listening.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Sindhuja Thirumalai Govindarajan. I'm an Alzheimer's Association Research Fellow and postdoctoral researcher at the University of Pennsylvania. And over the summer, I'll be transitioning into a new role as an assistant professor at the Karolinska Institute. I also serve as the outgoing chair on the professional interest area for elevating early career researchers. It's shortened as TIRSPIA, and this is within the iStart. Today, I'm delighted to be talking with Dr. Carla Abdelnour from the Clinical Trials, Advancement and Methods PIA. Hi, Carla. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sindhuja.
To kick things off, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit about your current work and research focus?
Of course. My name is Carla Abdelnour. I'm a clinician scientist, and I work in Barcelona, Spain, at the Hospital de la Santa Creu y San Pau in the neurology department in the memory unit. My work focuses on studying mixed neurodegenerative diseases of aging, particularly Lewy body disease with Alzheimer's disease, mixed pathology. And what I want to do with my research is to try to understand how these proteinopathies interact to develop better tools for diagnosis and also for treatments of our patients.
That's great. That's such a massive space at the intersection of two very important questions. How did you first get involved in this area of research?
Well, that's a great question, Sylvia. I started working on this approximately 10 years ago when I started my PhD. And I developed my PhD on dementia with Lewy bodies with Alzheimer's disease mixed pathology, because I was studying dementia with Lewy body patients that have Alzheimer's disease profile CSF. So I studied different aspects of this mixed pathology, in particular, how this patient progressed over time, because they had faster progression. That's what our studies have shown. Also, we studied how the presence of AD co-pathology in DLB influenced the clinical presentation and atrophy patterns. And all of that work was done in collaboration with the European Dementia with Lewy Body Consortium, which I'm very grateful for their help with my PhD. Then I moved to the US to do my postdoctoral fellowship with Professor Kathleen Poston at Stanford University. And there I was able to include Parkinson's disease patients with cognitive impairment that also have Alzheimer's disease biomarkers. So then I will have the full Lewy body disease spectrum to study and understand the differences and how the presence of AD co-pathology influence their cognition or the disease progression in general function, global cognition, etc. And also try to study novel biomarkers, in this case, plasma markers, and how to interpret them in the setting of mixed pathologies. So it has been great working on this field for all 10 years now, because I have been seeing the explosion and the increased awareness of the presence of cough pathologies now, which is great. I'm excited to see how many people now is interested in this field. And so I started working on my PhD on this. It was a great opportunity. At that time, I was working at Fundación ASEP as a neurologist, and I got the opportunity to join the European Dementia with Lewy Body Consortium and work on our Dementia with Lewy Body cohort. So that's how I got into this field. I have to be honest with you, when I finished my residency as a neurologist, I was interested in a stroke and also movement disorders. But then I joined a memory unit and I fell in love with our patients that have cognitive impairment because it's so interesting. Our memory, our behavior, that's what makes us human. And since I started neurology, what I wanted to do is understand our brain and how the brain works. So understanding behavior and cognition is a great way to do that. So when I got the opportunity to work on dementia with Lewy bodies, it was by pure luck, but I was super lucky because I was able to combine my passion about movement disorders, so Parkinson's disease, but also cognition. And I always have thought about that with sometimes we make these different fields more a little bit arbitrary, right? At the end, they're all neurodegenerative diseases. The patients are very similar. It's just sometimes because of how these diseases have been described that we separate them, but they're more similar than we think, and patients are very heterogeneous in general. So I'm very happy to be kind of in both fields, because that way it gives me the opportunity to learn from one field and the information to the other, so have a different perspective, I guess.
I think we're kindred spirits in that. I did my PhD with a different field of neurodegeneration and moved to the field of aging. I worked on multiple sclerosis before, and there are a lot of commonalities in terms of how the brain is affected. And I could see the spark in your face when you're talking about how complex the brain is. I agree with you that a lot of the presentations perhaps even are similar across a diverse spectrum of diseases. But exactly how we study them is quite different, right? So, for example, I'm representing the PRSPIA today, but my area of research is neuroimaging, mainly MRI focused. And so we're looking at how the PET mechanisms manifest, how can we study them in vivo, before sometimes when cognitive impairment presents, sometimes during the process along the continuum. In terms of your specific research areas, am I right in understanding that you're focusing more on the plasma markers and essentially biofluid markers and cognition? Can you tell us about the methodologies you use for your research?
Yes, of course, definitely, yes. So I have been analyzing biofluid biomarkers, mainly CSF. More recently, I also have been studying plasma markers. And at the beginning of my PhD, during my PhD, I also study MRI for studying the atrophy patterns. But I think what my goal is to work more on fluid biomarkers because it's the best matrix, I guess, to understand different proteinopathies. And different processes. So that's why I'm very excited that we are now able to identify alpha-synuclein in CSF. I remember doing my PhD when we were not able to do that. That is fairly recent. And reading on the papers at the end that said, but we need the alpha-synuclein biomarker. And now we have it. And that has changed our understanding of these diseases also. And the awareness, as I mentioned before, about the frequency of mixed pathologies and all the implications that will have for our patients and the treatments that we decide for them. So, yeah. I think I am more inclined, or I guess I bias to fluid markers because we can identify different proteins that reflect the proteinopathies, but also the pathophysiological processes that might indicate disease progression, or even I think I'm interested in trying to find biomarkers for monitoring patients or to see if we are able to identify markers, for example, for responses to treatment or for better for prognosis or prediction. And I guess biofluid markers are pretty good for that. But I'm happy to incorporate the other markers too, from neuroimaging. Particularly, I will be super happy when we have a PET for alpha-synuclein. That would be great to see alpha-synuclein in the brain. I think that would be super exciting.
That's great. One cannot argue with the specificity that comes from biofluid markers and how complementary they interact with other biomarkers as well. It's great to hear. So in your opinion, do you think the more recent advancements or discoveries that you're so excited about are adequately incorporated in clinical trials? Like, what would you want if you had a magic genie or a magic wand? What wish would you want to incorporate in clinical trials to fix a current problem?
I think that's a great question. I think one of the things that I'm very excited about is to incorporate the identification of different proteinopathies in clinical trials, either for inclusion or exclusion or for stratification. I think maybe we can start with the stratification. And that is because there is this question about what happens with a patient with Alzheimer's disease, for example, receive a treatment for amyloid or tau, but also have alpha-synuclein. Does that person respond similar to a person that doesn't have alpha-synuclein in the brain or everybody's, right? So I think this is a fair question, and I definitely would love to see more clinical trials trying to answer that question as a secondary outcome or exploratory outcome. I understand the difficulties, though, because right now the alpha-synuclein is available only in CSF. Not all clinical trials have, as an inclusion criteria, CSF specifically. Sometimes only you can have the PET, the amyloid or tau PET as an inclusion criteria. And not all clinical trials in Alzheimer's disease require biomarker confirmation, actually. So that's another thing. But yeah, I think I understand that it's not easy, but even if in a subgroup of patients, the clinical trials could answer that. And I must say that there are some very exciting clinical trials happening on that space, because there are at least two that I'm aware of that are going to investigate anti-amyloid treatments in patients that have alpha-synuclein positivities of Lewy-Body disease. And so I'm very excited about that, because it's the first time that we're going to use a treatment that has been developed for this field of Alzheimer's 1 disease. And we're going to treat a different population that comes from the movement disorder, also the Parkinson's disease with cognitive impairment or dementia of Lewy-Body. And so for me, that means that these fields are converging, which is super good, because I think that cross collaboration is going to teach us a lot of this. And I think that's the best way also to help our patients, because at the end, what we want is treatment for our patients. And we're going to need different resources for different patients, and for personalized medicine, we need that detail. We need that level of detail of how many proteinopathies the patient has in order to respond to the treatment or not.
That's great. Your excitement for the research topic and for the future horizon is very obvious from the way you can talk about this. That's been really helpful to set the stage for what I want to talk about next, which is the work of your PIA, which is the Clinical Trials and Advancements PIA. Can I call it the CTAM PIA?
Yes.
Okay, great. So clearly it's a massive interdisciplinary effort with converging disease spectrums, with converging proteinopathies, diverging as well, which is what makes it very fascinating. So how does your PIA organize itself with the different experts, from statisticians to clinicians? How are you organized, and how do you bring this work together within the PIA?
Well, I think that's a very good question. In our PIA, we have a collaborative environment, and we're very open to any topic or idea that somebody may have. And we always try to encourage people and help them and support them in moving those ideas forward, because usually they are within the objectives of the PIA. What our PIA wants to do is we want to develop better tools for designing clinical trials. And also we have a second objective that has to do with the education of people about the design of clinical trials. So yeah, you're right. We're a very interdisciplinary PIA, and I think that's a strength, because we can learn from different perspectives. And yeah, so any any idea that people have, and any of the members, I invite them to collaborate. If you have any idea about something that you want to develop, either a webinar or a different activity or a paper, just reach out to us. We will support you with your idea and probably put you in contact with people that will help you.
We will come back to how people can get involved in a second. But just to take a step back, I'd like to highlight a little bit more. What were the objectives of the CTMPA in general? I think you mentioned it already, but maybe we need a specific segment of it so the audience can know better.
Yes. So our PIA is on clinical trials and methods PIA. And the methods part is, I think, one of the very interesting ones, because what we want to do is try to develop novel methods or identify methods for design clinical trials for Alzheimer's disease and related disorders. And the second objective is to educate people about the, how to conduct clinical trials, what are the best methodologies if you have an idea for a clinical trial, which I found fascinating. And there have been a lot of webinars and different activities that the PIA has developed over the years to support people in this regard. Clinical trials are very difficult to manage and to perform, but I think with the right support, that can be done. So again, if people are interested in knowing more, just reach out to us.
Did you get involved with the CTMPA? What brought you here?
Yes, I love that question. So I got involved in 2020. It was during the pandemic. I remember when I received that email inviting us, and I thought, oh my God, that's such a great opportunity, because during the pandemic, I was working in Fundacio ASAS and neurologists, and I was heavily involved in the clinical trial unit. I was actually the deputy head of the clinical trial unit, and I was coordinating several clinical trials and more than 100 participants in clinical trial. And during the pandemic, what happened was that we had that question, oh my God, how are we going to conduct clinical trials in this situation, right? All these protocols, all these visits, what are we going to do? We have to adapt super quickly to all of that. So I thought that that would be a great opportunity to reach out to people from different parts of the world and understand how they were going to manage that situation. It was a great opportunity. In that regard, I learned a lot from my colleagues around the world on how they were managing that. But after that, it was a great opportunity also for networking. I have been always interested in clinical trials because I'm a clinician and I want to also be able to develop better treatments for my patients. And clinical trials are the best way to do that, right? It helps me also being up to date on the treatments that are being developed in the pipelines of the different neurodegenerative diseases. So yeah, I think clinical trials are very helpful. And as a researcher, it also has taught me about what is the best way to develop a protocol for a research. So if you are a researcher doing an observational study, or you have an idea for an observational study, learn about clinical trials, because that will be a great foundation. That is the gold standard, I would say, for developing a protocol for any research. It's the highest level of scientific evidence. So learning about clinical trials is actually very helpful for your career. So that was what brought me to the CTMPA, and it has been an amazing journey.
That's great. That's such a great way to introduce and highlight the contributions of the PIA. Could you tell me a little bit about how it's organized in terms of roles, the structure within the PIA, and how new members can potentially participate?
Yes, of course. So we're in the process of updating our executive committee, and currently the vice chair, Rama Raman, is the chair of our PIA. She's been an amazing work during the last 2 years, and I'm very grateful for her leadership. And this year, I will be the new chair of the PIA. We are waiting for the elections because we have elections just recently, and we will have our new EC team, which I'm looking forward to meet them, either in person or virtually. We'll have a virtual coffee if needed. So yeah, we're in the process of building the new EC, but we have had an amazing EC this year and the past period. And we have three working groups. So we have a working group on Lewy body trials that I work on in collaboration with the Lewy body dementia PIA. We also have another working group on diverse representation across the globe. And we have another one about remote assessments in clinical trials. So we have several working groups, and if people want to be involved either in these working groups or have other ideas, please reach out and I'll be happy to talk with you about your ideas and how to get involved more actively.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm aware of some of the programming you offer because I think our PIAs have been collaborating for webinars or information sessions even before I was part of it. In terms of programming that's related to the upcoming AAIC, what kind of sessions do you offer? Scientific, career development? Could you share a little bit about what new members or interested parties can attend or look out for at AAIC?
Yes. So during AAIC, I encourage people to come to the PIA Day. There is going to be an amazing discussion, a panel discussion on global representation in clinical trials. This is something that we have been discussing a lot during the past 2 years. Rema and Jorge Libre, Rema Raman and Jorge Libre are leading that effort with the working group, and that is going to be a launch after AAIC. So please come to our PIA Day. I think it's going to be an amazing discussion. And in addition to that, we have an FRS on the similar topic on representation that is led also by Rema. I don't recall the exact details, but I just reach out because I haven't checked the program in detail just yet. But we're going to have an FRS on clinical trials from the CITAMPIA. And I'll be in London. So if you have questions about how to get involved more actively, we're always asking for members' input or ideas. I think we're a very open PIA. And one of the things that we want to do for next year, in addition to continue the work from the previous EC, is to continue the increase of the engagement of the members, in particular the early career members that might be interested in clinical trial design or methods. Reach out to me. I'll be happy to give you my contact, and we can have a more personal discussion about your ideas or how to get involved.
Great. I particularly like your mention of early career researchers because that's the objective of my PI, which is PSPIA that I represent. In terms of easier involvement, you also have an EC position for early career researchers, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Although the elections are done for this year, can you tell us a little bit about what kind of activities have those ECR executive committee members gotten involved in the past?
Yes, in the past, the EC, the literary researchers have been involved in helping us with the year in review webinar. And that year, actually, we used to do two segments of that within one webinar talk, because we want to talk about pharmacological trials and non-pharmacological trials. And as you can imagine, Cinderella, that's a lot of work. But people have done an amazing work. I remember last time it was Irina who took on the pharma trials. And I'm very sorry because I don't remember the other person, but I think it was an amazing summary of what has happened because clinical trials is such a big field, right? There are a lot of clinical trials happening within 1 year. So I think it's a good opportunity for being up to date of what is happening. And I think we are going to continue to do that. In addition, I think also we might want to consider discussing novel methodologies, not only focusing on the clinical trials from the farm or non-farm side, but also what are new methodologies that people are developing for designing clinical trials.
So in what ways do you think the methodologies or techniques that you use for clinical trials different from what's used in research studies? Like, what are the challenges that one might not know about if they've only been exposed to, you know, research prospective studies like that?
Yes, I think that's a very good question. I guess, well, the clinical trials, since they are organized in different phases, and each phase has a main objective, you will identify your outcomes depending on the phase that you're studying. So, for example, if you are conducting a phase 2 trial where you want to study safety and tolerability, your outcomes will have to reflect that, although you can incorporate as a secondary outcomes cognition, function, or other aspects that you're interested, for example, biomarker changes, as exploratory markers, etc. Now, when you have a project or a research question, you will be designing your methods for answering that specific question, right? You are going to design your experiment to answer that question, and you will identify what are the outcomes that I have to measure to answer my research question. What I think might be similar between two approaches is how to develop the protocol, for example. You will have to identify what are the inclusion and exclusion criteria for their subjects. You are going to have to identify all the outcome measures and describe them. You have to calculate your sample size to know if you have enough people involved or samples or X to answer your research question, which is very important in both clinical trials and in research studies. And so I think having all that prepared beforehand, before doing the actual study, is super helpful. So I think the way that clinical trials is structured is translatable in most part to observational studies as a similar to-do list when you are designing an observational study.
Clinical trial design is very complex and interdisciplinary, it looks like. You previously mentioned what you would like to see ideally in a new clinical trial with the incorporation of like a magic wish of PET alpha-synuclein. But in terms of recent studies that have shown success, is there a particular study that you sounds very exciting to you, very promising, that you want to see more of?
Such a good question. So, do you mean a research study or a clinical trial in
clinical,
particular?
A clinical trial in specific, yeah.
Yes. So I went to ADPD recently in Copenhagen, and they presented a clinical trial that is going to investigate donanemab in people with Lewy body disease. I'm very excited about that clinical trial. It's a phase 2 trial. It has been done also in collaboration with the Lewy Body Dementia Association. And that has been an effort that has been led by Sharon Shaw from Stanford and Doug Alasco from UCSD. So I'm very, super happy to see that, because I need to know if these treatments also work in the population of that clinical phenotype that resembles Lewy body disease, but have the presence of amyloid beta.
Thank you for sharing that. What advice would you have for someone who is new to iSTART or Alzheimer's Association in general in this field of work? How do you think it has helped you to be involved outside of research advancements alone?
Yes, I think that's a very important question. I will say reach out to members from different BS, from your main interest. I think people is very open to explain their experience. So if you reach out to people and ask them about their experience, and if you're interested in getting involved more actively in any of the activities, just reach out to people. Also, you can reach out to the Alzheimer's Association and the PIA directly. I think their leadership team is amazing. They are doing an amazing job helping us to build this network of collaborators across the world. So if you have any questions, I think that's also a great resource. There is a lot of information on the PIA website about the different PIAs. If you want to check that also, because there are a lot of opportunities and you might have different interests, not only on one field, but different fields. And you can definitely be a member of several PIAs at the same time and different working groups too. I will also say that it's an amazing opportunity to meet people, to discuss ideas, and at the end to move the field forward, Sindhuya, because this is such a complex problem. We want to develop better diagnostic tools and better treatments for our patients. And we're not going to do that alone. We need a big team, a global team. And the Alzheimer's Association with the PIAs are doing that. So I'm very happy to be part of the PIA. And I would say that if you're interested, just reach out. We need more people working on these problems, more brain trying to answer these questions. So yes, just come on board and help us to end dementia.
Well said. We cannot do this alone. We have to work together on that. I think that is a fantastic wrap-up for the podcast so far. Thank you all for listening. This is the last show in the season for 2026. iStart PIAs are a great way, like Carla mentioned, to expand your network, find new collaborators, and learn more about Alzheimer's and dementia field in general. We hope that these podcasts have inspired you to get involved, and you can find the profiles on myself and our wonderful guest, Carla, and information on how to become involved in the iStart on our website at dementiaresearcher.nihr.ac.uk and also at www.alz.org/istaart. Or for simpler terms, Google iStart and it will take you there. We're looking forward to seeing you at the AIC conference. So if you haven't already registered, visit alz.org for more information and come find us and say hello. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
You have been listening to the Relay Podcast, delivered as a collaboration between Dementia Researcher and iStart. This podcast is made at University College London with generous funding from the NIHR, Race Against Dementia, Alzheimer's Association, Alzheimer's Research UK, and the Alzheimer's Society. Please like and subscribe and share your thoughts in the comments.